Everyone believed the Alpha King's blind warhorse was beyond saving, until the most rejected girl in the pack walked into his stable. By sunrise, everything had changed. Part 1. The Girl Nobody Saw. The cold came before dawn. Lena felt it before she opened her eyes. Not the kind of cold that a blanket fixes, the kind that settles into the bones and stays. The kind that reminds a person exactly where she stands in the order of things. At the bottom. She rose without making a sound, folded her thin blanket with careful hands. An old habit, from the days when she still believed that tending to small things could change large ones. She crossed to the window. The village was still sleeping. She was part of the Ashford pack, which meant she lived inside a hierarchy as old as the bloodlines that built it. At the top, the Alpha King, whose word was law across every pack in the Northern Territories. Below him, the sub-chiefs, the warriors, the ranked wolves who had earned their place through strength or birth or both. And at the very bottom, the unranked, the ones without bloodlines worth mentioning, without wolves powerful enough to demand space, without names that meant anything to anyone. Lena had been unranked for 22 years. She had stopped expecting that to change. She was a healer. Or she tried to be. In practice, she was the person others called when no one more important was available. When the pack's true healer was occupied with the Alpha Warriors. When the ailment was too minor to deserve real attention. No rank, no family name, no father who had ever publicly claimed her. Daughter of a woman who had died too young, and a silence that had lasted ever since. Lena. Just Lena. That morning, she crossed the central square with a basket of fresh herbs and nearly made it to the other side without incident. Nearly. "Well, look at that," said a voice behind her. "The herb girl." She didn't stop. "Hey, I'm talking to you. Dara. 17 years old, daughter of the subchief, and already very skilled at cruelty." Lena stopped, not out of fear, but because she knew that ignoring Dara in the central square, in front of witnesses, cost more than stopping. "Good morning," Lena said. Dara looked her over, the way someone looks at something they're deciding whether to step on. "You smell like the forest," Dara said. "Did you sleep out there again?" Soft laughter from the girls behind her. Lena kept her face still. "I was gathering herbs before sunrise," she said. "The chamomile is better when it's picked in the cold." "Nobody asked what you were doing." Dara tilted her head. "I was making an observation. You look like something the pack dragged in." More laughter. Lena looked at her steadily. She had learned a long time ago not to answer certain things. Answering gave them more material. Silence frustrated them faster. She gave a small nod, adjusted the basket on her arm, and walked away. She didn't run. She never ran. But she felt it, the way she always felt it. The specific weight of being seen only long enough to be dismissed. She turned down the side path toward the healer's cottage and didn't look back. Behind her, across the square, the royal stables rose against the pale morning sky. Part 2. The Impossible Thing. She heard about the stallion the way she heard about most things. By accident, from people who weren't talking to her. Two pack guards near the well, voices low but not low enough. "Tried to get close again this morning. Nearly lost a hand." "How long has it been now?"
4 months since the battle. He hasn't let anyone touch him since."
"The king still won't give the order?" A pause.
"He keeps delaying. But everyone knows it's only a matter of time. An animal that can't be handled."
The first guard shook his head. "Is a liability." Lena slowed her steps. "What does he look like now?"
"Like something out of a story, white as snow, eyes completely white, scars all across his flanks." A pause. He used to be the most valuable horse in the kingdom. Now he just stands in the dark and destroys anything that comes near him. She walked on. But something stayed with her. The king had been away for 3 weeks on campaign in the southern territories. She knew, because the whole pack knew. His absence was felt, the way a shadow is felt when the thing casting it is gone. He was expected back within days. Whatever was going to happen to the stallion would be decided soon. She went to the stables that night. She didn't plan to. She told herself she was only walking, that the path near the stables was simply the quietest route after dark. But her feet knew better. The square was empty. The torches along the fence burned low. She stopped at the stable gate and listened. Silence. Then, very faintly, the sound of something moving in the dark. She unlatched the gate. The stable was long and mostly empty. The other horses had been moved to the secondary building. He had the entire east wing to himself. She could smell him before she saw him. Something wild. Something old. Something that had seen things and survived them. She moved slowly. No sudden sounds. No quick movements. She had learned this with injured animals as a child. The ones that bite are usually the ones that are frightened, not the ones that are vicious. Fear looks like aggression. Until you get close enough to see the difference. She rounded the last stall divider and stopped. He was standing at the back of the stall, and he was the most extraordinary thing she had ever seen. White. Not pale. White. The kind of white that catches light even in darkness. His coat was silver at the edges, like frost on glass, shifting as he breathed. His mane fell nearly to his knees, long and tangled and wild. His body was massive, more muscle than she had expected, the kind built for war, for carrying armored men through chaos and fire and things that would break ordinary creatures. And the scars. They ran across his flanks in long, pale lines, across his chest, along the left side of his neck, old wounds and newer ones. A map of every battle he had survived. His eyes were open, completely white. No iris, no pupil, just white. Like clouds, like fog, like something between this world and the next. He turned his head toward her. He couldn't see her. But he knew she was there. She waited. She didn't speak, didn't reach out. Just stood at the entrance of the stall and breathed slowly. Letting him take in her scent, letting him decide. The seconds stretched. He stamped once, a warning. She didn't move. He stamped again. She stayed. Then, slowly, the stamping stopped. His ears, which had been flat against his skull, rose slightly. He took one step toward her, then another. He stopped 2 feet away, nostrils flaring, reading everything about her that his eyes could no longer provide. And then, so slowly it felt like a question, he lowered his head. His muzzle touched her open palm. Lena forgot to breathe. Part 3, The Secret. She came back the next night, and the night after that. She never told anyone. There was no one to tell, not in the way that matters. Not someone who would understand, rather than report her. She brought things, small things. A handful of dried apples she'd traded for at the market. A bunch of fresh lavender, which she'd read once helped anxious animals. A soft cloth for the wounds that hadn't fully closed. He let her touch the wounds on the third night. She worked slowly, cleaning each one with herb-steeped water, her hands as light as she could make them. He stood completely still, which she understood was an enormous act of trust from an animal that had been hurting for a very long time. "I know," she murmured. "I know it stings. I'm sorry." He exhaled through his nose, long, slow. "You're not broken," she told him quietly. "You're just in pain. Those aren't the same thing. He turned his great head toward her voice. She kept talking. She talked the way she never talked to people, without measuring her words, without calculating how they would land. She told him about the herbs she was trying to cultivate, about the old woman in the Eastern Quarter who paid her in bread for remedies, about the way the forest looked in the early morning, silver and quiet. He listened, or at least he stood still and breathed, which was close enough. By the second week, he came to her when she entered, not charging, not stamping, just moving through the dark with that strange, precise confidence that blind creatures sometimes develop, a knowledge of space that has nothing to do with eyes. He always found her hand first. Then he would stand, and she would work, and the stall would be quiet except for her voice and his breathing. She started calling him Niblina. Fog, because of the way his coat looked in the low light, silvery and shifting, because of his white eyes that seemed to see something she couldn't. He didn't react to the name the first time, but by the third time, she used it. His ears turned toward her when she said it. Close enough. It was during those quiet nights that she let herself think something she usually kept very locked. Away. We are the same, you and I. He was the most powerful creature in this kingdom. A war stallion. Decorated. Irreplaceable. And they had decided he was broken. She had no rank, no name, no bloodline worth mentioning. And they had decided she was invisible. Neither of them had stopped existing. They had just stopped being seen. She pressed her forehead gently against his neck one night and felt him lean into her, just slightly, the way a tired thing leans when it finally finds something solid. "We're still here," she whispered. "Both of us." Part 4. What the Fog Remembered. It was the lavender that made her wonder. She had brought it without thinking. It was simply what she used for frightened animals, an old remedy her mother had taught her. But when she held the bundle near Niblina's nose the first time, his reaction had been immediate and strange. Not calm. Not frightened. Recognition. The way a person looks when they hear a song from childhood. She thought about it afterward. Alone in her small room. Her mother had worked with horses. She knew that much. It was one of the few things she'd been told, that her mother had a gift with animals, that horses trusted her, that she had worked in the stables of a great house before she died. Which great house? No one had ever said. Lena looked at her hands in the dark, her mother's hands. She didn't pursue the thought further. Not yet. But it stayed with her. Quiet and insistent. The way important things do. Part 5. What Dara saw. She was careless on the 14th night. She had stayed longer than usual. Niblina had been restless. Something in the wind, perhaps. And she hadn't wanted to leave him agitated. So she stayed, talking him calm, one hand on his neck, until his breathing slowed. She didn't hear the footsteps outside. She didn't see the shadow at the stable door. But when she finally emerged into the cold night air, she looked up. Dara was standing at the fence, watching. The expression on her face was not cruelty. It was something more dangerous. Calculation. "You've been going in there," Dara said. "Not a question." "You're not supposed to be here either," Lena said quietly. "I followed you." Dara tilted her head. "3 nights ago, and again tonight." She glanced at the stable. "You've been tending the king's horse, the one that's supposed to be unmanageable." Lena said nothing. "That's trespassing," Dara said. "Interference with royal property." A small smile. "My father will find that very interesting." Part 6. The wrong kind of quiet. The subchief heard the report the next morning. He summoned Lena, listened to Dara's account with a carefully neutral face, and then looked at Lena for a long moment. "Is this true?" he asked. Yes, she said. He seemed to expect denial. The honesty appeared to inconvenience him. The stallion is royal property. You had no authorization. No one was treating his wounds, Lena said. They weren't healing on their own. That is not your concern. With respect, she said carefully, healing is exactly my concern. A long silence. You will not go back, the subchief said. The king returns within days. Lord Castor, his chief advisor, arrives tomorrow to prepare for the transition. I will not have complications waiting for either of them. He dismissed her. Dara, waiting in the corridor outside, smiled as Lena passed. Lena went home and told herself it was over. But that night, she lay awake and listened. Even from her cottage, she could hear it, faintly, the stamping. The sharp sounds that meant Niblina was frightened again. She pressed her hands flat against her mattress. Of course it ended here. She had let herself forget, briefly, what she already knew. Nobody chooses you, Lena. Not permanently. Not when something more important comes along. Part 7. Lord Castor. Lord Castor arrived the next morning. She saw him from a distance. A tall man in gray traveling clothes, moving through the square with the particular efficiency of someone who considers time a resource not to be wasted. She heard later that he had gone directly to the stables, that he had looked at Niblina for a long time, that he had said to the subchief standing beside him, "The king has delayed this decision long enough. I will recommend resolution upon his return. An unmanageable asset is not an asset." She didn't sleep that night. She lay in the dark and listened to the village breathe around her. And somewhere across the square, Niblina moved in his stall, alone. Part 8. The king at the door. He came back on a gray morning. She knew, because the whole pack knew. The king's return was not a quiet event. Outriders arrived first. Then the sound of hooves on the main road. Then the particular shift in the air that happens when power enters a space. She stayed inside. She had no reason to be anywhere near the square. She ground her herbs and told herself she wasn't listening for anything. She was listening for everything. The knock came that evening. Not Dara, not the subchief. A pack guard in formal colors. "The king requests your presence at the royal stables," he said. "Now." She had imagined this moment. In none of the versions had she imagined walking through the stable doors to find the king standing in the center of the corridor, surrounded by advisors and guards, Lord Castor among them, face unreadable, all of them watching Niblina's stall. Niblina, who was not calm. She could hear him from the entrance, the stamping, the sharp exhale, the sound of something large and frightened and angry in a tight space. The king turned when she entered. He was taller than she expected. Younger, somehow, despite everything she'd heard. Dark eyes that moved over her quickly and precisely, the way someone looks when they're actually trying to understand something, rather than simply assess it. "You're the healer," he said, "the one who was treating him." "Yes," she said. "Show me." She walked to the stall. Behind her, she heard Lord Castor begin to speak, something cautioning, and the king silenced him with a single raised hand. She stopped at the stall door. "Niblina," she said quietly. The stamping stopped. A long pause. Then the sound of hooves moving slowly across straw, coming toward her. The great white head appeared at the stall door. Those cloud-white eyes finding nothing and everything at once. He pushed his muzzle against her shoulder, exhaled, settled. The corridor was completely silent. She stroked his jaw slowly, the way he liked, and felt him lean into her hand. "How long?" the king asked from behind her. His voice was very controlled. 3 weeks, she said. Another silence. He attacked four of my best handlers, the king said. He nearly killed one of them. He was frightened, Lena said. He couldn't see. He couldn't understand where he was or what had happened to him. She paused. Pain does that. She felt the king step closer. And he let you in.
Yes.
Why? She hesitated. I think, she said carefully. He remembered something. About my mother. She worked with horses a long time ago. A pause. I don't know more than that. The king said nothing for a moment. When he spoke again, his voice had changed. Quieter. Something underneath it she couldn't identify. Your mother's name, he said. What was it?
Mara,
she said. Mara of the Eastern Valley. The silence that followed was a different kind entirely. She was not allowed back. The king's order came through the subchief the following morning, delivered without explanation. The healer was to be kept from the stables while Lord Castor's assessment was completed. It was framed as protocol. It was delivered like a door closing. She went home. She didn't argue. Of course, training arena 3 days later. Lord Castor's decision. A demonstration for the king. An argument that the stallion was beyond rehabilitation. That the kindest course was to end it cleanly. An unmanageable asset is not an asset. The arena was open to the sky, wide, cold, hard ground. She was brought there under guard, not in chains, nothing so dramatic, simply escorted, without explanation, through the arena gates. She didn't know what to expect. She found out quickly. A dozen people stood along the perimeter walls. Lord Castor near the king, papers in hand, already building his case in careful, practiced sentences. Pack warriors she recognized. The subchief, arms crossed, face deliberately neutral. And Dara, standing slightly apart, a small, satisfied curve at the corner of her mouth, waiting. Lena didn't look at any of them for long. She looked at Niblina, and her chest tightened immediately. He was at the far end of the arena, trembling. Not with aggression. She could see that from the gate. His head was down, his body rigid, his great silver coat catching the morning light in ways that should have been beautiful, and instead just looked exposed. Without her voice, without the scent he had learned to trust over 3 weeks of quiet nights. He was lost again, adrift in the white silence of his blindness, just an animal alone in a too large space, waiting for something familiar that wasn't coming. 3 days, she thought. 3 days without anyone who knew how to be still near him. Her hands curled at her sides. Lord Castor gestured toward the stallion. As you can see, Your Majesty, the animal remains entirely unresponsive to handlers. In the time since. Bring her in, the king said. His voice was quiet. But it ended the sentence completely. Lord Castor paused, papers still raised. The king did not look at him. The gate opened, and Lena walked into the arena. She didn't look at anyone else. She looked at Niblina. Hey, she said softly. Just that one word. Just her voice. Carried across the cold morning air. His head came up. The king watched her walk. Not the horse. Her. He had expected. He wasn't sure what he had expected. The subchief's report had said, unranked healer. No formal training. No authorization. Lord Castor had called it trespassing, an irregularity to be corrected. What he saw was a woman who moved through the arena like she had forgotten anyone else was in it. No performance. No awareness of the audience along the walls. No fear. Or if there was fear, she had put it somewhere he couldn't see it, which was a different thing entirely. And, in his experience, considerably harder. She walked the way someone walks toward something they've been walking toward for a long time. Like she already knew the distance by heart. Niblina took one step toward her, then another. And then he was moving, not charging, not fleeing, walking. With that strange, unhurried certainty that made several of the warriors along the wall take an involuntary step back, because they had seen this horse in the 4 months since the battle. They knew what he looked like when he moved towards something. This was not that. This was something they didn't have a word for. He crossed the arena floor with his head low and his silver mane trailing behind him, his scarred body moving through the cold air like something that had already decided, like something that had been waiting. The king felt it before he understood it. A shift. The particular quality of silence that falls when a room full of people stops performing and simply watches. Lord Castor had gone still beside him. The papers, for the first time since his arrival, were no longer being gestured with. The sub-chief's carefully neutral expression had loosened into something unguarded. The king kept his eyes on the woman. She hadn't changed her pace. She hadn't raised her voice or reached out her hands or done anything that looked, from the outside, like effort. She had simply kept walking, like she trusted him to come to her, like she had never once doubted that he would. When did she learn that, he thought. How does a person learn to trust something that has hurt everyone else who came near it? He found he genuinely wanted to know. Niblina stopped directly in front of her, so close she had to tilt her head back slightly. The size of him, the sheer mass of scar and silver coat and old power, made the stillness between them look almost impossible. The arena was completely silent. The king didn't breathe. And then, slowly, Niblina folded his front legs. His great scarred head descended toward the ground. Not a collapse. Not exhaustion. A bow. Deliberate. Certain. Complete. Nobody moved. Nobody spoke. Not Lord Castor. Not the sub-chief. Not the warriors. Not Dara, whose arms had uncrossed somewhere in the last 30 seconds, and who was now simply standing, watching, the satisfaction gone from her face and something quieter in its place. Something that looked, if you caught it at the right angle, like the very beginning of shame. The king looked at all of them, one face at a time, the advisor who had said liability, the sub-chief who had said complication, the warriors who had said nothing, which was its own kind of statement. And then he looked back at her. She had put her hand on Niblina's neck. She wasn't looking at the king. She wasn't looking at anyone. She was looking at the horse, at the long silver curve of his bowed neck, with an expression he couldn't quite name because he wasn't sure he'd seen it before. Not triumph. Not relief. Something quieter than either. Something that looked like, of course you came. I knew you would. He thought about the report, again, unranked, no formal training, no authorization. He thought about the fact that she had walked into a stable that 4 trained handlers had been unable to enter safely. Not once. Every night for 3 weeks. Alone. Without asking anyone's permission, without telling anyone she was doing it. Not because she had been assigned to, not because there was anything in it for her, because the horse was hurting and no one else was going to do it. He felt something shift in his chest, something quiet and significant, the way important things often are. She pressed her forehead against Niblina's. I know, she whispered. I'm here. He took one step forward. The movement was involuntary. He realized it a half second after he'd done it. And he stopped himself there, at a respectful distance, because something about the scene in front of him made the idea of interrupting it feel like a very specific kind of wrong. He stood at the edge of what they had built, the woman and the blind horse. He did not announce himself. He did not speak. He simply stood there. And watched. And understood. with a clarity he hadn't expected to feel in an arena on a cold morning surrounded by advisors. That he had almost ended this. That Lord Castor's paperwork had been one signature away from being an order. That he had nearly signed it. That if he had, he cut the thought off there. Behind him, he heard Lord Castor begin to say something. "Your Majesty, I think we can agree that, while this is certainly, that will be enough, Castor." Very quiet. Very final. A long silence. Then the sound of papers being gathered. Footsteps walking away. The king stayed. He stayed long after the others had gone. Long after Lord Castor's footsteps had faded. Long after the warriors had drifted away from the walls. He stayed until it was just the three of them in the arena. Him, the woman, the horse. And the morning had shifted from cold to something almost warm. He stayed because he had spent 4 months looking at Niblina and seeing an animal that was broken. And she had spent 3 weeks walking into the dark and seeing something worth coming back for. He wanted to understand how a person learned to do that. He suspected it had something to do with practice. He suspected she had been doing it her whole life. Part 10, finally seen. The head advisor left that afternoon. She didn't know the details. She didn't ask. She only knew that when the king found her in the stable that evening, where she had been reinstated, quietly, without ceremony, he came alone. No guards, no advisors, just him. He stood at the entrance of Niblina's stall for a moment, watching her work. Then he spoke. "Mara of the Eastern Valley," he said. "She worked in my father's stables, 23 years ago. Lena's hand stilled on Niblina's flank. "She was the best handler my father ever had," the king continued. "When she left, Niblina was still a foal. She was the one who first trained him." A pause. "When she disappeared, no one knew what had happened to her." Lena turned slowly. The king's expression was careful, controlled. But underneath it, something that looked, faintly, like guilt. "He recognized you," the king said. "Not you exactly, but something in you. The way you moved, the way you spoke, the scent perhaps." He paused. "She taught him to trust that." Lena looked at Niblina. Niblina, who had turned his great white head toward the sound of the king's voice, but kept his body angled toward her, present with both of them. Belonging to neither fully, choosing still where to stand. "Why did she leave?" Lena asked. The king was quiet for a moment. "I don't know," he said, "but I intend to find out." She didn't ask him to. She didn't ask him for anything. But he came back the next morning, and the morning after that. On the third morning, he brought 2 cups of tea and set one on the stable fence post without comment. Without expectation. She looked at the cup, then at him. He was watching Niblina with that same careful expression he seemed to wear most of the time. Like a man who has learned to think before he reacts, who has been given enough power that carefulness became a survival skill. "He's doing better," the king said. "Yes," she said. "He needed consistency. He needed to know someone would come back." A beat of silence. "Most things do," the king said quietly. She picked up the tea. It was the right temperature. Not too hot. Not cold. She didn't know if that was intentional. She suspected it was. Epilogue, what was always hers, 6 months later, on the first warm morning of spring, Lena stood in the meadow beyond the eastern fence and watched Niblina walk through the long grass. He couldn't see it, but he could feel it. The sun on his scarred coat, the soft ground under his hooves, the smell of green things and open air after a long winter. His mane lifted in the breeze. He moved slowly, deliberately, his great head swinging in that gentle arc she had come to know so well, reading the world through senses that had nothing to do with eyes. He had learned. He always learned. She had too. The king appeared beside her quietly. He did most things quietly now when he was with her. A deliberate stillness, like a man practicing a new language, like someone who had decided, at some point she couldn't pinpoint exactly, to be careful with something he didn't want to break. They stood together for a moment without speaking. That had become easy between them. The silence. She hadn't expected that. She had expected power to be loud, to fill every room it entered, to demand acknowledgement, to leave no space for anything that wasn't itself. He wasn't like that. Not with her. Not anymore. "I found the records," he said. She didn't look at him immediately. She watched Niblina take 3 slow steps through the grass, nose low, reading the ground. "Tell me," she said. He had been searching since the night she had said her mother's name in the stable corridor, and he had gone very still. She had noticed. She hadn't asked then. She was asking now. "Your mother came to my father's stables when she was 19, he said. She had a gift that no one could explain. Animals trusted her immediately. Horses that had never let anyone approach them would follow her across a field. Lena said nothing. She trained Niblina from the time he was a foal. He was her project. My father said he had never seen a bond like it. A pause. When she left, she didn't tell anyone she was going. She was simply gone one morning. My father searched for her. For months. His voice was careful. Measured. He never found her. Why did she leave? Lena asked. The king was quiet for a moment. Because she was pregnant, he said gently. And the man responsible was already promised to someone else. A woman of rank. A political arrangement that had been in place for years. Lena closed her eyes briefly. Opened them. Niblina had stopped in the middle of the meadow. His head was up. Ears turned toward her voice, the way they always were. Always listening, even from a distance. "She protected you," the king said. "She left, so that you wouldn't be born into a situation that would define you before you had a chance to define yourself." "It defined me anyway," Lena said quietly. "I know." He said it without flinching, without looking away. She couldn't have known that. She was trying to give you something clean. A pause. "She loved you before she ever met you. The records show she spent her last weeks in service, making sure the remedies were properly documented. The herb notes, the animal treatments, everything she knew." Lena looked at her hands, her mother's hands. "She left it for someone," the king said. "I think she always hoped you would find it." The meadow was quiet. Somewhere nearby, a bird was calling. The same note, over and over, patient and unhurried. Lena thought about a woman she had never known. 19 years old, and already carrying a whole future in her hands, making decisions that would ripple forward into a daughter she would never raise. Leaving behind herb notes, leaving behind a horse, leaving behind, without knowing it, a set of hands that moved the same way, a voice that sounded the same in the dark, a presence that a blind stallion would recognize across 23 years and recognize again, without hesitation, the moment it walked through his door. "She didn't abandon you," Lena thought. "She sent everything she had forward. And it found you." Her throat tightened. She let it. Niblina turned in the meadow and began walking back toward her. Unhurried. Certain. The silver coat catching the morning light. The long mane drifting. The white eyes open and seeing nothing and somehow, always, finding her anyway. He stopped at her side. Pressed his muzzle against her shoulder. Exhaled. She put her hand on his jaw and felt him lean into it. "That small, heavy lean that meant you're here, and I knew you would be, and this is enough." "Lena," the king said. She looked at him. He was watching her with that careful, precise attention she had come to recognize. the look of a man who has learned that the most important things are often the ones that don't announce themselves. "I spent 4 months looking at him," he said, "and seeing something broken." He paused. "You spent 3 weeks walking into the dark and seeing something worth coming back for." His voice was quiet, completely serious. "I don't want to be someone who makes that mistake again." She held his gaze. "What kind of mistake?" she asked. "The kind," he said, "where something valuable is right in front of me, and I almost miss it because I wasn't paying the right kind of attention." The morning light moved across the meadow. Niblina breathed slowly against her shoulder, and Lena understood. Not all at once, but in the way that true things arrive, gradually, and then completely, that he wasn't talking about the horse anymore. He hadn't been talking about the horse for a while now. She looked out at the meadow, the green of it, the warmth of it, the particular quality of a morning that has decided to be generous. She thought about every morning she had crossed that square with her basket of herbs and her carefully still face and her knowledge, worn smooth from years of practice, that she was not the kind of person who got chosen. She thought about the girl who had stood at a stable gate in the dark and gone in anyway, not because anyone asked her to, not because there was anything in it for her, because something was hurting and she was the only one paying attention. She thought about her mother, 19 years old, leaving herb notes, trusting the future with everything she had. "You knew," Lena thought. "Didn't you? You knew it would find its way." "Okay," she said. The king looked at her. "Okay?" he repeated. "Pay attention," she said simply. And the corner of his mouth moved, just slightly, into something that was not quite a smile yet, but was clearly on its way to becoming one. "I intend to," he said. Niblina lifted his head from her shoulder, turned back toward the meadow, took 3 slow steps into the grass and stopped, nose up, reading something on the breeze that only he could detect, and then, with the particular dignity of a creature that has survived everything the world threw at it, and come out the other side still standing, he simply stood there, in the sun, at peace. Lena watched him, felt the warmth on her face, felt the king beside her, close enough that she was aware of him, far enough that he was still giving her space to decide. She had spent 22 years being invisible, not chosen, not seen, not enough. And here, on a warm morning in a green meadow, a blind horse had walked across an arena to bow at her feet. A king had sent his advisor away and stayed. And somewhere in a set of old stable records, a 19-year-old woman had written down everything she knew about healing and left it for her daughter to find. "You were always enough," she thought. "You just needed to find the ones who could see it." She breathed out slowly. Long, steady, like a thing that has finally been set down. The end. If you made it here, then you know. That arena scene, Niblina walking across that cold ground, blind, scarred, certain, and bowing. Not for the king, not for the crowd, for her. If that gave you chills, if the meadow at the end made you breathe a little slower, leave a comment below. Tell me about Niblina. Tell me what you felt in that arena. And if this story found you at the right moment, hit subscribe. Because there are more stories like this one waiting. Stories about women who are finally seen. Animals who choose. And love that arrives quietly and stays. See you in the next one.